Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the 2018 Healthcare Business Women's Association podcast series. My name is Julie Kelly, and I'm a volunteer leader and your host for our show. Now, for those of you who are not familiar with the HBA, HBA is a global nonprofit organization comprised of individuals and organizations from across the healthcare industry committed to achieving gender parity in leadership positions, facilitating career and business connections, and providing effective practices that enable organizations to realize the full potential of their female talent. And our podcast programming is just one way we support our members to achieve our mission. Our discussion today is on how diversity drives corporate success. And to provide insight on this topic, I have two HBA members from across the globe, I may add. Alvin Tremolet is from Pfizer, and she's the inclusion lead for the Global Women's Council and Diversity Inclusion Council in Europe. Anisha Laundry is a supplier diversity consultant for Novartis and CEO of Culture Consultants. So welcome, Alvin and Anisha.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you're both here. You know, as always, before we get started with our program, let's find out a little bit about our guests. Alvin, tell us a bit about your background, passions, and how you landed in your current role.
So again, thank you very much, Julie, for this opportunity. I am Alvin Tremolet, although Tremolet is my spouse's name. I was born Asene Ekumu, and I think it's important for me to say that.
Yes.
And I am French now, but born and raised in Cameroon, Central Africa. I did my whole, schools in Cameroon, and then I went to university. I wanted to, my passion was working on, as a translator. And then finally I thought, I wanted to work at the UN. And for some reason I couldn't make it. And then communication was also another passion for me. So I have a background in communication and PR. And that's how I got in France to join a communication school in Paris. I did not start it, naturally when you're after a communication school, the natural pathway is to become a communication manager. But I didn't start it like that. I started as a marketing assistant at Pfizer. I really wanted to join a global company, multicultural company, and also a company where I can speak English because Cameroon is bilingual, French and English, but I'm from the French part of Cameroon. So joining Pfizer was really an opportunity for me to really working with people, coming across different cultures and different part of the world. So I started as a marketing assistant, then executive assistant, still at Pfizer. The advantage that I have in my company, I have to say, is that I can be involved in various, enterprise initiatives and projects. I really learn a lot, by being involved in these internal corporate initiatives. And in recognition of these experiences, I think I got selected in 2016 as a diversity and inclusion lead, assuming the role of operation lead for Global Women's Council and the Diversity and Inclusion Council in Europe. And something I want to mention is that before, beginning this role, I also got to this role because being an HBA member, an HBA volunteer really helped. For example, I received in 2015 the Euro Excellence Award about Europe recognizing my contribution to the association in Europe. I'm a member since 2009, volunteering in Paris and at European level. And today I'm the HBA Paris Chapter Director of Operations. Something I want to highlight also is that HBA really enables me, to gain confidence on myself. I remember the first time I had to speak in front of, 50 people was during an HBA event. when I applied for my current role, I was already connected internally with many colleagues, many HBA members, and an opportunity for me to remind that networking is really key when we want to progress in our career. And it's not always about your level of expertise, but who you know, who is aware of your expertise, and this can really, you know, take you to the next level. My passions. I think I'm generally passionate about other cultures, about people, and most of all, about learning. These components for me are, you know, really can make a difference for a better world and for a better place. Working on D&I is a perfect opportunity for me to nurture this passion, and how did I land in my current role is really by being involved in, you know, work-life balance initiatives in France, being an associate member of the council in Europe, and of course, as I said, HBA also played a role to get there.
Wow, what an overview and what a background, and how lucky we are in the HBA to have you. And, you know, again, let's speak to the power of the HBA across the globe, building skill sets. I have, it's not a surprise to me that you are where you are, Alvin, and thank you so much for sharing your story and look forward to hearing your thoughts later. And we also welcome Ishan Landry to this call, who brings a different perspective and background to our conversation. So, Ishan, would you please share a bit about yourself, your passion, and how you became an entrepreneur in the DI space?
Absolutely. I actually started my career a little bit differently. I started my career doing a little bit of accounting and finance and did that as a numbers cruncher. And then a friend who was working in the staffing industry kept telling me, we worked in the same building, and she kept saying to me, "Mishan, you're such a people person. You need to come over to the staffing world." So after about 6 months, she convinced me to come over to the staffing world, and I started working in the staffing industry for Kelly Services, and had a unique opportunity to work on site as a staffing manager for Johnson & Johnson Medical, and so did exclusive staffing for them. I worked for Kelly for 4 years, until Johnson & Johnson actually closed the facility where I was working and moved the operations over to Malaysia. And from there, I was kind of like, okay, now what am I going to do? And another friend actually recruited me to another staffing company that wanted to build a staffing model, an on-site staffing model like what Johnson & Johnson had. And so I helped that organization, the client they were working with, built the on-site model, and then thought after 9 months of blood, sweat, and tears that if I can do this for them, I can do this for myself. And so I started my own staffing company called Integrity Staffing. And in my model, I wasn't doing temporary staffing. I decided to do direct placement only. So I focused on sales and marketing, human resources, and accounting and finance positions. Well, shortly after starting my business, 9/11 hit. And so now companies were laying off people and people were looking for jobs. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, my gosh, what am I going to do as a business owner, right? And so I decided to take my years of experience in the staffing industry and turn that around. And so what I did is I started teaching people how to look for jobs and how to interview, and started writing executive C-level resumes and doing executive coaching. And so I did that through the economic downturn. It really sustained my business. And later when the economy started turning around, you know, and companies were starting to do hiring again, you know, I was, you know, at this point almost 10 years and into the staffing and recruiting world, and thought to myself, I don't know if I want to continue to do this. Just didn't have the passion for it. And but didn't know what I wanted to do. And so I took a leap of faith, closed the doors of my business on a Friday. And on a Monday, I put my resume out on Monster. So that tells you how long ago it was. Put my resume out on Monster. And then on Wednesday, ADP, the Human Capital Management Payroll Company, called me, and I was interviewing for a HRIS, or Human Resource Information Systems Manager. And so I, after several interviews, went to work for ADP, managing a team of consultants that built HR and benefit websites for our mid-sized clients, or for their mid-sized clients. I worked for ADP for almost 10 years. Later, I moved over into their small business services division. Once an entrepreneur, always an entrepreneur, that sort of thing, and wanted to be closer to the small business clients. And so I went to work as a client relations manager, client relationship manager, and managed a very large team that was responsible for not only handling their strategic relationships with the clients, but helping them with all sorts of issues as it related to tax and finance questions and any sorts of things that they might help or have. And so in my second year at ADP, ADP was starting their diversity and inclusion initiative, and one of the division vice presidents, general managers, tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Hey, I'd love for you to be a part of this." And had no idea what I was doing at the time, didn't even know what D&I was, but had the unique opportunity to start up their first diversity resource group and build the infrastructure so that other resource groups would follow. And so that's actually how I landed. Fast forward, I started falling in love with D&I, and of course in that role, I was more in a volunteer basis and felt like this is something that resonates with me, and I felt like I wanted to do it on a full-time basis, and so that's what really propelled me to start my business, Culture Consultants. And so that's how I got where I am. So it's funny, fast forward, here I am working in consulting for Novartis and supplier diversity, but it's funny how everything comes around full circle, right?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
It's kind
of world.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for sharing your story as well. So we had some very different perspectives come into this conversation. So let's get started. So, Aldine, what's the most valuable impact a diverse and inclusive culture can have on a company?
Well, I think it's not only, first of all, it's not only about number of differences that we can have in a team or in a company. I think the quantity is good, but the quality is better. It's really about leveraging these differences in the service of performance. So I think how it's really about how someone feels in a company. How do you feel when you contribute to a meeting or project versus how you feel when your voice is not heard? Just imagine yourself. You will get frustrated, and with frustration, you're going anywhere. So when you contribute, you have wings. You want to keep the momentum. You are engaged, and you want to stay in your company. And what happens when you feel you don't belong? So you're completely, you feel out of the game, and so a great illustration, an example that I really like taking when talking about inclusion and belonging, to answer to your question, I like taking the example of the movie Hidden Figures. I don't know if both of you had a chance to see that movie, and if you don't, please go and watch this movie. It tells the story of three African-American women in the 60s who worked as mathematicians at NASA, and helped to send, John Glenn into the orbit. And I think this movie really illustrates the power of the sense of belonging. And when you put some trust on people, they will touch the sky for the company and for the benefits of the engagement of the team. So inclusion is the key. But how do you build an inclusive work? It's really about making sure that everyone is heard. And for me, I personally think that men also have a role to play Again, in the movie, you will see that it's because men pushed on the button that they made it.
They made it happen.
Right? Yes, they made it happen.
So, yes, it made it happen. So it's about making everyone feel important in an organization,
yeah.
bringing them in,
yeah.
valuing their contributions, letting their voice be heard, because that keeps everyone working for the company and moving forward. It's this retention that really costs organizations a lot of money, and it's human capital that they're losing. So you can't move forward
yeah.
if you're not tapping into the best talent and making people feel valued and getting the best out of everyone. That's a great point. I did see that movie. It's a great movie, and I enjoyed it. If you haven't seen it, everybody, please check it out. So, you know, inclusion is the key, as you mentioned, but building this inclusive work environment, that's the secret sauce. So, Mishan, you have some thoughts on that. You've made a business out of that. Can you please share?
Yeah, I mean, building an inclusive culture and work environment, It takes a lot of time. It doesn't happen overnight, obviously. I think that it starts with being very intentional, being very deliberate about the decision to make it inclusive. It's definitely more strategic, and it begins, honestly, with a roadmap. I think that, you know, starting it out with a roadmap is the foundation of where you want to take the company, where you want to see the company, you know, and it's about putting things like processes and training, learning, and development into place and really putting those levers in place, right, that set the groundwork for making it happen. I feel like building an inclusive work environment, you know, honestly, I mean, we could talk about this for 30 minutes alone, but, you know, I've seen it where it works both ways. I've seen it where it's a bottoms-up decision versus a tops-down, and honestly, I can tell you it's worked so much better when it's a tops-down decision, you know, when you've got that buy-in from the CEO, from the senior leaders. You know, it's easier, I think, for the organizations to get on board and for people to begin to understand the value that inclusion brings to an organization, you know, and how it becomes embedded, you know, into every piece and every fabric or, you know, every part of the organization itself. You know, it really can be an incredible experience, you know, when you're building that inclusive work environment. But I'm going to tell you, it takes work.
It does take work. Can you give us an example of behaviors of inclusive leaders?
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I believe that inclusive leaders first begin with self, so a sense of self-awareness is key for an inclusive leader. I believe that you cannot lead others until you successfully been able to lead yourself. Mm-hmm. So self-awareness is a key trait of an inclusive leader. I believe that inclusive leaders also have traits of EI or emotional intelligence. And one of those truly is around like self-regulation, being able to regulate your own levers. I'm just going to use that as an example, you know, being able to be accountable just like everyone else, I think, and even more so, and hold yourself to a higher standard of accountability, I think is key, you know, in inclusive leadership and being an inclusive leader. I think that a sense of curiosity is important from an inclusive leadership standpoint, because you cannot be an inclusive leader without being curious about other people, right, and trying to understand why things are the way that they are. You have to be able to ask those questions in order to be an inclusive leader. And so I think those are just some of the traits of an inclusive leader. I mean, I could go on and on and on. Certainly empathy plays into that, and having a sense of empathy, not sympathy, but empathy, being able to, like, walk in other shoes, you know, and not just talk about how they hurt for other people, right? So, I mean, so many traits of an inclusive leader. But, yeah,
right,
but those are just
talk about. Yeah, you talked about cultural agility. Can you share your thoughts on that and define that for our audience? Because I thought this is really a unique trait. Go ahead.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that focusing on inclusion, inclusiveness, starts with developing a sense of cultural agility. I mean, cultural agility, I think, is that ability to navigate and communicate where you're able to interrelate and function in these diverse settings. You know, that's key for any inclusive leader. And so culturally agile leaders are not only adaptable, but they're flexible. They have this knowledge that's essential to understanding other cultures and understanding that not everyone sees the world through that same cultural frame and through that same lens, right? So I will give you an example. So culturally intelligent leaders, you know, who are typically extroverted, they take an extra demonstrated effort to show restraint, for example, when doing business with individuals where cultures may value humility or modesty. That's what I talk about when I'm talking about cultural agile leaders. You know, they understand how regulating their tone or speed, you know, tone and speed of their voice is important, you know, and then they even know how to modify, like, their verbal gestures or behaviors or even facial expressions and body language, because, you know, we could go into microaggressions and all of that, but, you know, we won't. But all of that plays into being a culturally agile leader. So
absolutely,
that is key to an inclusive leader. So I forgive me for not even mentioning that one as a key trait, because that's key.
And absolutely, and in a global organization, it's really a have to have. So thank you for those thoughts. Now, Aline, we've talked about inclusion, the importance of an inclusive leadership, but specifically, how can we embed this into our company culture?
So thank you very much. I first of all, you know, I really join Mishan's point about, you know, learning from others, because people don't know what they don't know. And I started talking about that, and one of example what I want to say about inclusive leadership. I went back to school for an executive master in communication, and I really, my memoir was on inclusive leadership. So. And you know,
love
discussing
it
with many people, it's really learning from others. And again, I'm again going to talk about gender, you know, partnership, the role that men can play. Because, first of all, internally, I had a chance to work with, you know, great men who really, you know, enabled me to work on great projects or gave me the right advice at the right time. And it's important also to highlight the important, you know, role of men in the development of, you know, female colleagues. You know, at different levels, they can be involved formally or informally in mentorships, relation, and sometimes men ask us or ask me, so what can I do, because they don't know, so they are wondering on the role they can play to really, you know, enable women, female colleagues to progress in the corporate world. And my answer will be to them, so first of all, look around yourself and see who is part of your network. What is the position of colleagues in your network? And if not enough women, volunteer to be their mentor or be that person who can talk to them if needed. Listen to these women. Make sure they can speak up when they are invited to the table. And if they are not invited to the table for some reasons, invite them to these tables. And, you know, also enable them to, you know, to facilitate their, you know, work-life balance. And if by themselves they don't speak up, they don't start a conversation with you, then you as a man, start that conversation with them. So these are the kind of few tips I can, you know, you know, give about the attribute of an inclusive leader. Inclusive leadership is really about making sure, as we already said, that every voice is heard in the service of performance. Again, I really like to highlight again, because it's really in the service of performance.
That's excellent. It was an excellent point. You know, it's about, you know, being the bigger person, taking that step forward. you know, you have a meeting and you have a mix of employees at the table. One's not participating. Is it cultural? And if it is, then it's up to you as the leader to pull that person into conversation. You know, how many times have we been at meetings and we know the same people weigh in on every single point? And I created a practice where I went to the person that wasn't talking. So I'm really interested to hear what you have to say about this. So I love that point. This call has gone so quickly, ladies. Let me get some final thoughts. Michonne, what kind of recommendations do you have for companies who want to better leverage all their talent for a better performance?
Wow. So I would say that number one, start with identifying, because I think every organization, you know, has a bench strength of an inclusive leaders. You know, I think start examining your organization to see who are your inclusive leaders, right? And then what leaders do you need to develop in order to increase that understanding of inclusive leadership. If you're not sure, I would say, you know, do a survey in order to identify, right? Because there are surveys that can be done to help identify where those gaps are. I would say that, you know, once you've identified those, begin to put in the work, you know, to fill in those gaps, because certainly there are lots of opportunities. And I'll just really quickly, I know we're running out of time, but there was a survey that was done that talked about, and they did a survey in many organizations where they talked about behaviors and traits of inclusive leaders. And in this same survey, out of the over 400 people or organizations that took it, only two-thirds of the respondents said that more than less than half their leaders actually demonstrated inclusive leadership behaviors and traits. So I think identifying those behaviors and traits and looking at where those gaps are with your leaders is one key way.
Excellent. And I think the other thing, Elmi, we talked about, you have to make it strategic and you have to measure it, correct?
Yes.
I mean, how do we know how well we're doing? Right. And I mean, you had one other example I wanted to share in our last 2 minutes of the show. You talked about analyzing company protocols. Can you share a little bit about some stuff with clinical trials?
Yes, it's true that it's really about much more about diversity in the pharma world. And I think clinical data are providing, you know, insight for prescribers about how people are likely to respond to medicine and therefore how these medicines can be best used. And, you know, differences between people can often lead to different responses to the same medication. We have age, we have gender, we have ethnic origin, we have even geographic location. So it's about, and, you know, we see that, you know, recruiting study participant is, you know, difficult across all populations. In, you know, people are sometimes underrepresented in healthcare generally. So the barriers can be economic, linguistic, cultural, as, you know, Michonne, you mentioned. So it's really about when recruiting, population for clinical trials, making sure that you have the whole range of the population so that the medicines that you are going then to deliver are really, you know, targeting the whole range of the population. So that's not no kind of certain population is left, and because even for a company, there's a kind of section or segment of the market that you're losing.
Absolutely. Well, it all begins with who you have in your organization and making sure that you're screening for diverse and inclusive leaders, that you model it, that you make it strategic, and that you measure it. And I think that you also reward those who are modeling that behavior. So I want to thank you both for joining this program. It flew by. So
It did.
And we've enjoyed your thoughts. And for our listeners, we look forward to our next podcast where we will learn about STEM careers and how a technical background really can open doors for you. So this is Julie Kelly signing off for the HBA. Thanks again, ladies.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye.